This summer, the world must answer one question. Why has no one made a popsicle that gets you high yet?
That's right, it's summer, and it's time for you to get your hands on America's new favorite product, Danksicles. 20 milligrams of THC in two great flavors, the latest and greatest innovation from IndiCloud.
Is IndiCloud the greatest company to come out of America? Maybe. But what we do know for sure is that IndiCloud is the best way to get dispensary-grade cannabis delivered directly to your door, 100% legally. Yes, they ship legally to all states. No medical card needed. Whether it's vapes as big as your head, flowers you won't find in your mom's garden, or, of course, popsicles that get you high as what are you waiting for? Go to IndiCloud.co/spring24 and get discreet delivery on top-shelf THC products. Head over to IndiCloud.co/spring24, that's co, not com, to snag 30% off your first order.
House of Wax, the ultimate dimension in terror.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Burt Reynolds and Charles Bronson podcast. I am your host, Scott White. We have a special Halloween episode. I'm once again joined by my good friend, Emmy Service.
Hello, it's me.
We are doing the 1953 3D horror classic, The House of Wax, starring Vincent Price and Charles what's his name?
Not Charles Bronson, I don't think.
Yeah, that's his real name.
Oh, you're trying to pronounce his actual real last name? Not a clue.
Yeah.
But also,
Churosky.
I
believe it's Churosky.
Sure, we'll go with that.
In the 50s, before he made it big in the 60s and 70s, he usually had small roles of heavies in movies. And this is one of them, and it happens to be a horror movie. What is your reference of Charles Bronson? Or do you even have any reference to Charles Bronson?
I am pretty sure Ten Commandments?
No.
Fuck. Who was that?
That's Charlton Heston.
Charlton Heston! Okay. I was like, I'm going to say this, and I don't think it's right. So I know who Charles Bronson is, but clearly not what movies he's been in.
He is most famous for Death Wish, the Death Wish movies.
Okay. Then apparently the most I know about Charles Bronson is that one joke from The Simpsons about being in Bronson, Missouri. Play Simpsons clip here.
I was going to put the Simpsons clip in right here, but once again, I don't like to be told what to do, so guess what? No clip.
So we are doing The House of Wax, and Charles Bronson plays a deaf mute.
Oh, so that was who, okay. I was going to say.
That's who Charles, the deaf mute, that was Charles Bronson.
Got it.
So I can't use any clips of him, but we'll talk about his performance once we get to it. You're also obviously a big horror movie fan.
Yes, very much so.
What Vincent Price, what's your take on Vincent Price?
Oh, I love Vincent Price. I grew up watching the original House on Haunted Hill, which is my favorite of the Vincent Prices. 13 Ghosts, the old one, I also... It's good, but I like House on Haunted Hill better. I had seen House of Wax, but it was so long ago, I didn't remember it very well. And this, I actually, as far as Vincent Price ones goes, might like this one better than 13 Ghosts. But House on Haunted Hill is still my number one Vincent Price.
Vincent Price is one of those actors, whatever he is in... Mm-hmm. He just brings class.
Yes.
And elegance to it. As you know, he had a wonderful sense of humor, because mm-hmm. he also poked fun at his horror image,
yeah.
and also did comedies. You know, that brings him up in my book, too, because he just had a sense of humor about himself, and he
yeah.
didn't take himself or the work that he was doing. I mean, he took the acting seriously. Not himself seriously, yes.
I personally love when celebrities or whoever are able to be in on the joke and do not take themselves did you see recently Jury Duty, I think, on Amazon?
I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, James Marsden plays himself in it, and it's a great little series, so definitely watch it, but also I just love the fact that James Marsden full-on makes fun of himself and Hollywood, all together. I love that, so yeah. Mm-hmm. Pluses for Vincent Price in my book. But he's also one of those actors where... And ironically, Tony Shalhoub does this too, which I made the connection because Tony Shalhoub was in the remake of 13 Ghosts, which is, I have more to say on that if we have time. Mm-hmm. But both of them, even if the source material is not great, they still take it they take it very seriously and they give their all to that part. So there are definitely moments in this where it's kind of cheesy, but you wouldn't, but Vincent Price doesn't play it cheesy. He plays in sincere.
No. So it's in 1953, and yep. it was shot in 3D. So this was when yep. you went to the movies, you would see this in 3D. So the credits are those credits that just coming at you. The time frame, this movie takes place in, I'm guessing, through a couple of dates that we are given in the movie, the early 1900s.
Yeah, sounds about right.
We go to this wax museum, and we pan through, and this wax museum is all historical...
depictions.
Depictions, thank you. Cleopatra.
Joan of Arc.
Marie Antoinette.
Abraham Lincoln and Booth, yeah.
John Wilkes Booth. And we pan through, and there's Vincent Price. He's working on this wax figure. And then I get his benefactor at the time
mm-hmm.
walks in, and they have this... It's the typical... You're not making any money.
He was making money. He just wasn't making as much money as the benefactor wants him to be making. You're making money. You could make more.
Right.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, I had that conversation not too long ago with somebody. The guy, I guess benefactor, who boss, whatever. He has
bought. His partner? Financial partner or something.
He has put $20,000 into this wax museum.
Yeah, his investor.
He's an investor, and $20,000 at that time was an enormous... I mean, it's a large amount of money now, but then it was just
a million or something.
A million, close to that.
Yeah.
And he's like, we could make more money because these other wax museums are putting in a house of horrors. And
right.
Vincent Price is like, no, that's not my thing.
Yeah.
And
it's
right
crass,
there, and that's
it's uncivilized, it's gauche.
Yes. And right there, he makes fun of himself. He's in on the joke. He goes, oh,
yeah.
Horror movies. That just doesn't appeal to me. And I'm like,
right.
That's Vincent right there. Yeah, that's...
wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Hello, Matthew. What are you doing here so late?
I came to get the books. I want to study our account.
Well, we've been doing very well lately. Over 200 paid admissions today.
Do you call that good Saturday business? If you weren't so stubborn, we'd be turning them away from here weekends.
Who cares a hang about history and wax?
There are people in the world who love beauty.
But more who want sensation, shock.
Morbidly curious. I won't cater to them.
Their money's as good as anybody else's. You should have seen them turning them away at that wax museum on 23rd Street tonight, the Eden Musée. The story's the same at Madame Tussauds in London. You'd only listen to me,
Jack. I know, Matthew. I'd put in a chamber of horrors. Murder, torture, execution. Scare the living daylights out of people. I don't care for that kind of patronage.
You're a great artist, a genius sculptor. But I'm just a common, ordinary businessman. I want a quick return on my investment. I've got $20,000 sunk in this historic peep show of yours, and I could use that money to better advantage.
All right, Matthew, all right. I've known for some time you wanted to dissolve our partnership, and I think I may be able to accommodate you.
Oh.
A friend of mine is bringing Sidney Wallace, the art critic, here tonight to see my work. Wallace is rich, and I think I might be able to persuade him to buy you out.
Well, that sounds interesting. Of course, I'll want a profit on my investment.
Yes, Matthew. I understand. You leave everything to me, and I promise you it'll be... That should be they now.
All right, I'll wait in the office. I've heard of this Wallace. He has a pot of money. If he likes your stuff, put a stiff price on it.
the guy's like, I want to get out of this. And Vincent Price, well, I know you want to get out. I have this guy coming. He may want to invest. So if he wants to invest, he may buy you out. Mm-hmm. And the guy's like, great. And then his new benefactor or his future benefactor
potential,
shows up at
yeah.
the door. Potential. Thank you. So the guy, his business partner, goes up into the office.
And like, weirdly, like, spying on the whole thing from the open doorway, yeah. which was, like, a weird, like, well, I mean, you, why do, I don't think they wouldn't let you just go on the little tour with them. It was just a weird, but also, like, lends to that guy just being kind of weird in general. But then they go on the little tour of all the little vignettes, and he kind of describes them. And the thing that I took away from that whole opening was that for the beginning of a horror movie, Vincent Price and the whole thing, just it was so gentle, it was so like soft and loving, which I imagine was intentional because of where it goes later. But like I kept thinking, like, oh, he's so like just kind and intentional with these little wax figures, and he's like talking to him, he's kind of chuckling at, oh, I talk to them when no one's around, huh, it's silly of me, ha 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 ha, and there it's like very charming.
That is a character that Vincent Price cultivated, is the good. He starts off as a good man and then yeah. through a horrific event turns into an evil man.
Mm, yeah.
yeah, that, you know, that was his specialty. And this yeah. is one of the first times we see that.
Mm.
The benefactor's like, you know what? I like what I see. I may consider investing. However, I've got to, I'm funding a trip to Egypt.
Yeah, like you do.
But I'll be back. Yep. Like you are when you're a rich benefactor. You're always running off to Egypt. And he's like, I'll be back in 3 months and we'll talk about it. And Vincent Price is like, oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And then they
yeah.
leave.
Problem solved. End of movie.
And then his partner comes back down and is just like, well, I heard the whole thing. 3 months isn't going to work for me. And Vincent Price is like, I don't know what we're going to do. It's either that or not. He's like, I don't have the money to give you. And he's going to be back in 3 months. What are we going to do? And then the guy goes, well, you know how flammable wax is.
This scene goes from 0 to 80. Like, when he says that first thing of like, well, you know, there's a either way we could both walk away with a bunch of money. And immediately I'm like, oh, that's because I couldn't remember. I think that was the other thing about this opening scene is Vincent Price is so gentle and kind. I couldn't remember, like, how does he turn to the crazy person? And then I remembered, oh, this is why, because this guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
I did remember this. And the guy's like, we torch the place, we collect yeah. the insurance money. And Vincent Price is like, no, because Vincent Price is refers to his works of art as his children.
And we literally just spent children. Like, we spent like the first 10 minutes just watching him with these wax figures. So we already, that, and they did a good job of setting that up. So we immediately know how painful that would be to do this, because now we see this relationship that he has with the wax figures. So immediately we're like, oh, don't do that. That's horribly mean. And he listens to him and he walks away. And 3 months later, he has a new benefactor. End of movie. Right?
And he sets Marie Antoinette's dress on fire.
Like out of nowhere. Out of nowhere.
He's lighting a cigar and he's just like, and these things go up.
Immediately.
Almost immediately. And he's lighting them up and Vincent is trying to put them out. And they get into a scuffle.
It's literally the next 5 minutes is the benefactor like striking matches and putting things on fire and Vincent Price trying to put them out, and then they start punching each other, and then Vincent Price gets like knocked unconscious at one point, and then the other guy like goes into the workroom, starts throwing like the wax or paint thinner or whatever it is everywhere, lights it more on flame, and it's like, and it's 5 whole straight minutes of just firefighting.
It's a very effective scene because, one, as you said, we set up how important these yeah. things, these figures are to him. So
yeah.
just to see him melting away.
Yeah.
But the wax melting away, and this being, I'm guessing, one of the few movies shot in color up to that time.
Yeah.
It looks like they're crying when the,
yeah,
when the wax melts
yeah.
away. So that it was a very effective.
It was effective, yeah.
Yes.
It probably the scene probably went on a little bit long for me. Like, it probably didn't need to be 5 whole minutes, but it was still effective because I felt you feel bad for Vincent Price because he's looking around and he's like devastated. However, the laws of physics cease to exist in this house because they are standing amidst so many flames, and like neither of them seem to be affected by the heat, which
no,
is a common theme later.
Another, what we get is, this being the 1900s,
yeah.
the house is being heated or lit by gas.
Yes, that's right.
So gas is flowing while these flames are going. And there's certain scenes where you look and it's obviously a stuntman for Vincent Price.
Sure.
But there are scenes where he is in there with the fire. And the final scene before the building blows, Vincent Price runs, and it's him, because you see his face. He runs under this doorway, and then the balcony above that door collapses. Mm-hmm. So that was Vincent Price doing his own stunt in there.
That was a good stunt.
And then as the gas explodes, and the whole building goes up in flames.
Yeah. And Vincent Price died, and that was very sad, and the benefactor got the insurance money. End of movie. That's the last of those jokes I'll make.
Then we cut to sometime later.
Months? A year?
It's got to be at least months.
Yeah.
It's vague, but we see his partner, who is with...
A blonde actress.
Who is?
I wish I could tell you, because she looked familiar, but I couldn't
place
her.
Morticia Adams.
Oh, shit.
From the Adams Family.
Oh, that's what... Oh, yeah.
Carolyn Jones.
Okay.
Carolyn Jones was a blonde in real life, and she wore the black wig on the Addams Family. So.
Wow, I did not put that together. And she also sounds vastly different. She's got in my head, she's like, if you've seen Guys and Dolls, she is in full on Adelaide mode because she's got the blonde hair and she'd kind of talk like up like this a little bit. And she's weird. Like she's very just. Well, it's more apparent in the next scene, but she's like callous.
She's a ditzy gold digging blonde. That's all she is.
No character development.
No, she doesn't have time. But yes, but that is Carolyn Jones, who went on to be Morticia Adams in the TV show. The owner's like, oh, if you only knew Vincent Price like the way I knew him. He was an artist, and she's like, well, did the insurance... And the first words out of her mouth are, did the insurance check clear? And he's like, yeah, it just cleared today. We had some problems. We had to make sure he was dead. But it finally cleared today.
And then she goes, yeah, they always want a corpse.
Yes.
Which is like, what do you mean they always? Have you done this before, ma'am? I have questions for you.
From the sound, she probably has.
I'm sure she has.
And then...
they always want a corpse.
And then he's like, yeah, I got the money in my safe. Where do you want to go? And she's like, let's go through... Reno or
Vegas. Niagara Falls. In those days, you went to Niagara Falls to get married.
And he goes, in the most uninspired way, he goes, yeah, I don't know, maybe it'll be something, yeah.
Like, that's romantic, hooray.
Yeah.
And she's not fazed by the fact that he's like, oh, yeah, sure, marriage, that could be fun. No, because I think that they're going to go to Niagara Falls. They were going to get married. She was going to push him into the falls and walk away with that insurance money.
So we go back to his office, and he gets the money. And now we see...
The Phantom of the Opera.
The Phantom of the... That's exactly what it is. We see the Phantom...
Vincent Price. Literally, yes. Yeah. Was this first or was Phantom of the Opera? No, because Phantom of the Opera came from, like, the 20s, right?
Oh, yeah. That was Lon Chaney Sr. So, okay. Phantom of the Opera was in the 20s.
Okay. But so it's not... So this was not the inspiration for Phantom of the Opera, but like the bad guy of this movie full on looks like Phantom of the Opera.
Yes, it's Vincent Price. His face is horribly scarred, and he's
what? That was Vincent Price.
And he had a black hat on. He's walking. He's crouched down. He's walking weird.
He's skulky.
He goes into apparently this guy has no.
No peripheral vision whatsoever.
No, not peripheral vision. He's right in front of him. He's got no vision.
Yeah, no, he just full on's like,
say peripheral vision, but no, this guy is right in front of him. And Vincent Price. But they do that slow where a hand comes up from behind the chair and puts it. Let's take in mind these are 1953 audiences. So,
sure. It's terrifying.
I'm sure it was at this point. He turns off the light and he strangles him unconscious, I believe. With a cord.
I wondered about that because honestly, I couldn't tell. He either strangles him unconscious or he strangles him to death. It's one of those two, but I didn't think it was clear. But this will be important in a moment. Because then
Because then he takes a longer piece of rope, and so these are the 1900s. So these are the elevators. They're
like
in
open
cages.
Metal bars.
They're in open metal cages. There's no safety. It's like you can open doors when the elevator isn't on the floor. It's just that's just how they were built back then. Sure. And he ties the rope to one end, and then ties the rope to his neck, and then throws him down the elevator shaft. And it looks like he committed suicide. And once again, we're looking through this through 2023. So this movie is 70 years old. So audience at the time would just the way that body hit and snap, and they show, because usually in movies like this, you see the, you don't see the end result. You see the person getting thrown out of the elevator with the rope around its neck, and then...
And you might hear, like, that snap. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. But we see this, and then the cleaning woman sees it, and she screams, and then Vincent Price and he takes the money, too. He takes... I thought that was funny, too. He's lying on the floor, and he just goes through his pocket, and he takes his wallet. I thought that was kind of funny.
I mean, to be fair, that was his insurance money first.
That was his insurance money.
Yeah. So, like, was it stealing or was it just claiming what was his? But that's why I was short.
You wouldn't want a misdemeanor on top of that murder charge.
I mean, at that point, you're already going away for a while.
Yeah.
But it's very unclear whether the benefactor was already dead or if falling down the elevator shaft, like, broke his neck in the fall. He didn't. I'm thinking he was strangled to death already because when he, like, fell and did that kind of, like, bounce thing that you do with the when you fall at the bottom, like, there was no reaction. He didn't, like, kind of, like, jerk or, like, his hands to, like, clutch at the noose. He just was there. So I'm inclined to think he was already dead, but honestly, it could go either way.
It could go either way, but it doesn't really matter. So he's dead for sure now.
Oh, he's very much dead.
And then we cut back to the blonde, Carolyn Jones, and her roommate.
They didn't like set that up till later. Because at first I was like, is this her maid? Like, I didn't know who she was. They get to it later. I'm like, oh, okay, got it. But like, that was not clear at first. But this is the scene where I'm like, this blonde is cold.
Yeah. Carolyn Jones plays, her character's name is Pamela, and the other woman's name is Sue. First of all, they're strapping her to a corset, and her waist is about...
It's already tiny. It is tiny!
And she's going on saying that how she was going to marry this rich guy, but he preferred to hang himself.
And then she's like, what a card! Like, literally says, what a card, and then laughs. And then it's like, do-do-do, off on a new date. And it was just like, I was like, oh, ma'am, I was not expecting that. So cold. Like... Yeah, I feel like there's another movie about that character, because, like, how did she get to be like that? That was,
Well, so these are two lower-income women, and one, Sue, who's our main character, she's, as they put it, you're not like me, you're smart, and then Carolyn Jones, Sue, she's basically, I'm using my body to get a rich husband. That's what she's doing. And she's got a big date tonight. Big date tonight. We don't know with who, but it's like he's very elegant. He's good. He's sending the handsome cab. We're going to this nice restaurant.
Mr. Moneybags.
Mr. Moneybags. It's also made apparent that Sue is behind on her rent.
Yeah, and Sue's going to like a job interview, and she's like, "I hope I get this job interview because like I haven't had anything lately," and yada yada yada. And then I guess Pamela has like a slight soft spot because she does give Sue some money. She's like, "Here, make sure you eat something."
And she also gives her. It's like, oh, and apparently the guy she's at a job interview with is handsy, and she gives him a heads up on that.
Right.
And that initially is why she doesn't take the job in the first place, because she is not like Sue. You know, she doesn't want men pawing at her, and she doesn't want men touching her. That she doesn't want touching her.
Yeah, because later we cut to, I guess, like, it's because I guess they're in their shared bedroom in, like, the boarding house or whatever, and then later we jump, and Sue's coming back, and the mistress of the house is like, oh, where have you been? And she's like, oh, I'm trying to get her a job. Did you get it? No, I had a problem with the manager, and we're like, there it is. Yep.
So that's it. So, she doesn't get the job, and she's like, but don't worry, Sue said that she will give me some money, and... The landlady's like, well, she's upstairs now. Go get it, because you're not spending one more night in this house if you don't pay the rent.
Pamela's the blonde, right?
Pamela is the blonde, yes.
Okay. You kept saying Sue was going to lend me money. Okay, just making sure.
It's not going to matter anymore, because you go upstairs, and Sue finds Pamela dead. She has been strangled. She's lying in her bed. Vincent Price comes out of the shadows and sees Pamela, and Pamela screams.
Sue. He sees Sue.
And sees Sue. God damn it. He sees Sue. Well, technically he would see Pamela.
I mean, he does see Pamela, but Pamela's dead, so she doesn't see him.
Yes, Pamela is dead, and she sees Sue, and yeah. Sue screams.
Sue screams.
And runs and jumps out the window.
And then I love this reaction. They cut away to like the bottom of the stairs where like four people come out and go, "Did you hear that?" And one goes like, "The scream came from that way." And then they all just stand there. And he's like, "Let's go check it out." And then the guy shoves the mistress of the house
the
like
landlady. I thought that was something very, very subtle and very, very funny. I thought that. Well, let's go check it out. And he like puts his hand on the small of her back. And just leads her up the stairs.
Yeah, like, I see you, sir. All right. They go up the stairs so goddamn slow. I don't want to be like, they're screaming. They're, like, urgent, people. Go, go, go. They saunter up the stairs in time to see not Vincent Price.
No.
Oh.
Because Vincent Price has followed her out the window.
That's right. And Sue's not there either. So the four of them go up and just find Pamela. So they're like, ah, who screamed then? Because she is very dead. But then we have this, like, long, again, a little bit longer than I would have liked, but a little bit of this long chase scene, like, over the rooftops and then, like, down the alleys. And it's, like, not London,
this,
but...
This obviously was a set, but yeah. I liked the way it looked. It looked really nice with the rooftops and the cobblestone streets, fog, and it was lit really well. Obviously a set, but it looked really...
Effective.
It looked really nice. It looked really effective. Sue runs all the way to a friend of her mother's house. So her mother has passed away, but she runs to a friend of her mother's house.
Okay, I was wondering, again, wasn't entirely clear whose house she ran to, but I was like, someone she knew. Okay, fine.
It was a friend of her mother's, and her mother has a son called Scott.
Ah.
And Scott and Sue grew up together.
And I think we get the idea pretty quickly that like they're kind of like keen on each other, but...
Yeah.
But it also doesn't really matter for this movie.
It doesn't really matter. However, I did like their relationship. In these old movies, it's like, hey, I just met you. We're in love. And their relationship felt like a real relationship, how it would have developed organically. It's not like, hey, I met you, I met me. You know, we're totally in love right now.
Right, right.
That movie love, as it is.
Sure, yeah. Sure. Yeah, rom-com love.
So we cut back to the boarding house. The police are there.
I did appreciate that they didn't fall into, like, the trope of, she's dead, where's Sue? Oh, no, she fled the crime scene. It must have been her. Like, they didn't fall into the trope of thinking Sue was the murderer. They were like, okay, clearly she's been dead for hours, so you didn't do this, so what happened? And I was like, okay, great. I'm glad we circumvented that whole stupid thing.
And they go to the morgue, and it's like, oh, yeah, she was dead for hours.
Yeah.
She was stranded with a cord, and then they realize, okay, so this is like the third murder. It was like, and it was like the police captain,
right?
He was murdered, and so so not only have they been murdered, but we're going to find out later that bodies are being stolen from the morgue.
Gross.
Because they examine the body, they take the body to the morgue, and there's a scene where one of the bodies springs up. And one of the attendants goes, "That's just the embalming fluid. It makes
and just shoves them back down. It's fine. Shove."
and this movie does have, it's like that's typical dame. Always wants to get in the last word.
And oh my god, that made me cringe so hard, and I had to be like, '50s humor. I get it. We've come a long way since then, but also, Jesus Christ."
Vincent Price is there. He steals Pamela's body from the morgue. He lowers it down to his two assistants, and they're off. And then the next day, we go to the police office, because the next day, Sue has collected herself, and now she's telling the cops what happened. And they're sort of chastising her. It's like, why didn't you come last night? And they're like, well, she wasn't,
like,
you know.
I had a day.
And then she describes them. It's like, well, I can't. And once again, the police are like, you're a dame. You were hysterical. Are you sure he looked like this?
And then, she was also, Sue was saying, well, Pamela had a date right before, but it couldn't have been the guy that I saw, because Pamela said that her date was very handsome and had silver hair, and the guy that I saw, yikes. So they're like, oh, clearly a different person.
They don't suspect her, but then he's like, don't leave town. Yeah, where's she going to go? It's like,
so she's going to hop on a plane.
Then we cut to...
What's his face? Is this the benefactor that we, or the potential benefactor that we saw at the beginning of the movie?
Yes.
Okay, got it.
And we see him, we knock on the door, he opens the door, and this is the first shot we get of Charles Bronson.
Not Charlton Heston.
Yes, Charles Bronson opens the door, and Charles Bronson plays a deaf mute in this movie.
Which I'm also thankful they didn't go fully offensive with it. He was just kind of like, because his name is Igor in this, so it's like, ha 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 ha. But he didn't go full, like cringe with it. They could have.
They could have. So. I really liked his portrayal. I thought he did a really good job as a deaf mute. I bought it. Charles Bronson later in life was not, you know, people would make fun of his acting, but at the beginning of his career, he took it seriously. He took this role seriously. I bought him 100% as a deaf mute.
Yeah.
And
well, I appreciate that he didn't play him stupid, because being a deaf mute does not mean that you're stupid. It means that you just can't hear or speak, which is not stupid. It's not the same thing. So I appreciate that there was that distinction, because a lot of times in movies for quote unquote comedy, they don't do that. And then that's when we get cringe.
Charles Bronson leads him in, and we see Vincent Price again. So Vincent Price had survived the fire.
No.
And he's in a wheelchair. He's in a wheelchair now.
Much grayer,
and his hands are not burned beyond recognition, but they...
They're still hands.
His hands work. Yes, they still work, but he cannot do delicate work as sculpting anymore.
I'm trying to figure out how to describe them. They look like so pruney, but if pruney fingers from a bathtub were like stiff. Like that's what it kind of looks like.
He reveals himself. Yeah, I'm still alive. I didn't die in the fire. And to me, this is like a huge deal that this is glossed over. It's like, you mean the person that we thought was dead all this time is alive and nobody's going to look into it? It also turns out that he has another assistant, and this assistant can speak. So he's got two assistants. They are his students. They've been sculpting. He's been telling him what to do.
He's like a creative director.
He's showing his new benefit. And now Vincent Price has a totally changed attitude. It's like, yes, I want to open a new wax museum. I want to scare the bejesus out of people.
Give the people what they want.
Like, Mr. Wallace.
Professor.
It's so good. Oh, forgive me. Shaking hands with me is an unpleasant experience. My hands are no longer hands. Sit down, please. Oh, this is Igor. He's a deaf mute. He's one of my assistants. I'm going to open another wax museum under a different name. It startled you, eh, seeing me here?
That's an understatement. I thought you were dead.
Jared is dead. I am a reincarnation.
When I read this letter and saw your signature, I thought somebody was playing a joke on me. I still don't understand how you escaped from the fire.
It's a mystery to me, too, Mr. Wallace. All I can remember is that I tried to get out of my studio. I failed at first, but here I am.
What a frightful experience.
Somehow I made my way to the house of a doctor. Now, well, I still have my limbs, though they won't bear the weight of my body. As for my hands, they're no use to me now. As a sculptor, I can't control them, but they serve for ordinary functions.
But you're beginning again?
With the help of my pupils, yes. I'm rebuilding my exhibition from the ground up. I'm going to give the people what they want. Sensation, horror, shock. Send them out in the streets to tell their friends how wonderful it is to be scared to death. Let me show you one of my subjects. Do you recall the case of Kemmler, the first man to die in the electric chair?
Yes.
Igor is working on a model of his head. He has a strange obsession, this mute of mine. Every head he models takes on the shape of his own face.
And Vincent Price gives these long speeches, but you don't mind because of his voice and his panache, the way he delivers it.
He's one of those actors that, like, I would listen to him read a phone book. Like, just the tone of his voice and the way he speaks. Yeah.
Yes. He leads them through
another
the factory.
Now he's got the new, like, floor show kind of thing, and, like, the new depictions now are of, like, horrific deaths through history. So still historical, but, like, now it's more gruesome.
But not only that, what he wants to do is he wants to open up recent deaths.
Right.
And that there's going to be a special room where it's like, if you read about that death in the paper, you're going to see it here in the Wax Museum.
Yeah, scandalous.
And their lab is downstairs. So they go downstairs, and we see this giant bubbling cauldron of wax. And he shows him how it works. It's, we coat the body in wax before we put the hand and the heads on. And so we, and that, once again, that's going to be...
It's like we it's they said like we coat the mannequins, the dummies in wax. This is how we do it because they're mannequins, they're dummies. Wink. <Yes. laughs> Wink. We believe this. We don't believe this.
He shows him some more stuff and then he shows him the wax mannequin of his former partner, the one that he hung.
And they're like, "Oh, that's weird. Huh. I'm sure it's fine though."
And he opens up this crate. And the wax dummy falls out of the crate. He's like, he hung himself. And then we go to intermission.
Which I did not remember this movie having intermission. Because this movie is like a tight 90 minutes. So it doesn't need an intermission. But also, I just forgot that like this is an older movie. And sometimes older movies did have them. But also, they were like, I remember intermission from... specifically Oliver and Sound of Music, because those movies were 3 hours long, so you didn't need an intermission.
They put an intermission in this movie because they felt the 3D effect would have adverse effect on the audience, and they would need to take a break.
Oh. So I forgot that this was 3D until when we come back from intermission and this next scene. I don't remember anything that was 3D or that could have been 3D because we didn't watch it 3D, obviously. But like, what in the first half was 3D?
I don't know. It was like I had the exact same thought as you did. It was like I okay. never really caught anything that would have been 3D.
No, not until so like we come back from intermission and it's the opening of the new House of Wax, Chamber of Horrors. And first we have to have like a good, you know, 2 minutes of random sideshow Barker with a ping pong paddle just bouncing balls at the audience. And that was when I went, oh, this was probably in 3D because he's bouncing it at the camera, which I'm sure in 1953 was super cool.
Yes, but, so he's bouncing it at the camera. And there's a couple of scenes where he's talking right into the camera where it looks like he's talking to somebody in the audience. It's like, hey, put down that bag of popcorn or else I might knock it out of your hand. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, and that probably was very fun to be in the theater and have that happen. But it was also a lot of that. I almost wonder if there was no 3D in the first half and it was just that part. Because honestly, other than that, I couldn't tell you what was 3D. But my favorite, so like we go, I think we go inside and do stuff and then come back out later. But when we come back out later, he's still ping-ponging away. But then he does this really fucking weird thing where he ping-pongs and then catches the balls in his mouth, and he does it with three separate paddles. And I was like, why is this an attraction? That's weird and gross.
Well, it was the 1900s. But yes, so he's barking to get people into the House of Horrors, and we see these three women outside, and they're like, ooh, let's go in. These three women, these three women from the early 1900s, they're in a house of horrors. So the people who are watching this in 1953 are thinking, oh, this is tame, but it wouldn't have been tame for the people in the 1900s. While we watching it today, watching the people from 1953, it's like, oh, this movie is so
this
tame
is so
today.
Tame.
But it would have been driving them up the wall. So it's really
irony.
It's a nice irony progression.
It's the circle of life. Or death. Or horror.
It's the opening night, and Vincent Price is like, you know, he's a showman. He's in a wheelchair, so he's wheeling himself around. Here, you know, and then he starts showing, and then we see the women are starting to,
swoon.
They're starting to swoon, and Pamela and Scott show up.
Not Pamela. Pamela's still dead.
Sue, God damn it. Sue and Scott show up. S's. Sue and Scott show up.
There it is.
And Scott is also a sculptor. And yes, Scott is friends with the benefactor. So Vincent Price is introduced to Scott as a sculptor, and then he's also introduced to Pamela.
Sue!
God damn it. Sue!
You just want Carolyn Jones to be in the rest of this movie.
Now, so, okay. Yeah. But no, but okay, so. But Pamela is not gone.
What?
Sue sees Joan of Arc.
The Joan of Arc, yes.
And it's the spinning image of Pamela. And she is and it's so close to being Pamela that she's visibly shaken by it. And Vincent Price comes up and says, I saw her picture in the paper. she resembles my Joan of Arc, so mm-hmm. I sculpted her from, you know, from the pictures in the paper.
Perfectly reasonable explanation.
It is, but Sue doesn't buy it.
No.
But the benefactor is like, oh, this is Scott, and Vincent Price, oh, I've heard of you, would you like to sculpt for me? And Scott's like, yes.
Yeah, then we've got that weird thing where Vincent Price looks over at Sue and it's like, oh my God, you look just like my Marie Antoinette. And they have this cut where the actress is like standing perfectly still, her eyes kind of moving back and forth. And then it like cuts to her in the Marie Antoinette garb, still perfectly still, eyes cutting back and forth, as though we needed help to picture her as Marie Antoinette. Be like, remember Marie Antoinette? Remember what she looked like? That was Marie Antoinette. Okay, got it. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And he's like, would you come and model for me? And she's like, sure. Okay.
Which is not like a thing that she does, I don't think.
She's not a professional model. No. Yeah.
But she does need money. So she does need money. Yeah.
And Vincent Price excuses himself. It's like, I'm very, very tired. And then Scott and Sue leave. And then we see the Barker again.
No, well, before that, they goes through some more of the exhibits, and there's like the first person that was executed by electric chair, which was like, oh, that was kind of macabre. But then also they do have the vignette of the ex benefactor hung in the elevator shaft.
Yes.
So they did have that there, which is like, that's a choice.
And then Scott and Sue leave, and then the paddleball guy is there, and he catches him.
Oh my God.
Now, during this, one of the three women have fainted.
In a very, very comedic way. Because it wasn't like a swoon to the floor. She just full on like eye crosses and just tilts forward completely.
It's one of those where there was like a mattress,
But it was so funny because it's like so unladylike, and like considering it was the 50s movie in the early 1900s time era, it's like the most unladylike for someone to faint.
because in the front of the wax museum, they had a belly dancer and it was motorized and her hips were moving, and she's like, I bet I could do that. And they're like, stop.
Right.
No, you can't stop moving your hips. You could never do it. Yeah. And then we go outside and she sees the paddleball guy catch three balls in his mouth.
Yep.
And then she passes out again.
Yes.
And then it's very comical. And so this movie it's got nice horror features to it, but it also has
peaks and valleys.
Yes.
It's
got good pacing. We go to Sue. She's getting ready for bed. Her best friend, somebody snuck into her room and tried to strangle her. She saw this guy, so before she goes to bed, she opens her window wide open and then goes to bed. Vincent Price has followed her home. And at this point, we're not supposed to know. I mean, anybody who knows anything about movies knows that this is Vincent Price.
Right. But as far as the movie like logic goes, Vincent Price, the sculptor, is in a wheelchair, so it couldn't possibly be also Vincent Price, the murderer.
Right, and Vincent Price's face is intact. And this guy's face is fucked up. I guess they were trying to fool. I don't know how many of the audiences back in 1953 were fooled, but so we're not supposed to think that this is Vincent Price.
It's possible that at the time that it was a shock because you know, it was 50s, so there weren't as many, you know, movie tropes or things that they could have like identified at the time. But also, you know, this movie was brand new, so they didn't already kind of have that idea of like, well, it's Vincent Price, so of course it's that guy. So it could have been a surprise at the time.
He throws a grappling hook onto her building, swings into her window.
He's Batman.
She wakes up and she screams and he runs away. The woman she's staying with comes up and she's like, he was here. And, you know, and he's comforting her on her bed. And I guess it would have been scandalous if Scott came in. So the mother came in. And
it was interesting that like Vincent Price comes in with a grappling hook to just like check on her, but then just leaves. I guess it's just like to, for the sake of the movie, they had that there, but like just to get her rattled and then for things to progress. But as far as the logic of Vincent Price in the movie, I'm like, what is the point of that, sir? Just like recon? I don't know.
Maybe he was going to kidnap her that night and this thing went awry.
That's true. It could have. Take two. Could be.
The next day, she goes to the
the cabaret? Like, I don't know what to call it. Like, yes. the strip club of the time. But by strip club, it's like can-can dancers.
It was can-can dancer. I guess it would be, not at risk, because it was for, she's like, do respectable people come here? And she's like, and he's like, yes, respectable people come here all the time. But
yeah,
it's
they're fully clothed, yeah.
They're fully clothed. I mean, yes, they have...
Yeah, I think the scandalous, quote-unquote scandalous part comes from the fact that because they're the can-can dancers, they're, like, lifting the skirts to show their, like, bloomers underneath. But, like, they're still fully clothed the entire time. So it's not, yeah, it's not stripping or burlesque. It's just the fact that, like, oh, there are undergarments there. Gasp. And then she's and Sue's doing the whole, like, demure, like, lowered eyes. Like, oh, I can't look at it. I can never. But she's still there, and Scott's like, yep, this is fun.
And then Sue shares with Scott, when I saw his Joan of Arc, Pamela only had one earring. She didn't have both ears pierced. She only had one ear pierced. And that ear was pierced on Joan of Arc. How would she know? How would he know that only one ear was pierced? And he's like, well, he's seen pictures. He's an artist. He's trying to talk her out of it. And she is absolutely sure that there is something going on.
Which is also, again, I understand that, like, as far as the movie goes, they need a hook to keep this going. But for the time of the 50s and then the time of the early 1900s, would a lady have one ear pierced? Like, that seemed like a very strange thing for Pamela to, like, that be the thing that was, like, the reason why it was definitely Pamela, because of the
it's
one
it's never really
ear.
Explained, but she just said she only pierced one ear.
Right.
I don't even know when ear piercing started. Was that this?
I mean, I feel like there's been ear piercing of some sort in, like, many cultures, but, like, as far as when it became, like, socially acceptable for our country or culture or whatever, I don't know. But also, like, one ear piercing is not... I feel like that wasn't really a fashion thing until, like, way later. I mean, yeah. I also could be just completely talking out of my ass because I don't actually know. But it just seemed like a thing for the time for that to be a strange thing.
He takes her to the police, and she tells him, it's like, look, there's something up. And then the police go, he actually came in, Vincent Price actually came in and looked at pictures of her.
For reference, so for the sculpture.
For reference. So Scott's like, see, that's how he did it. And she's just not buying it.
Right, because they're like, see, perfectly reasonable. And she's like, but this isn't still weird a little bit, kind of? Still, I still feel like this is kind of weird. They're like, yes, but it's regular weird, not...
They reluctantly are going to look into it. There's two policemen in this movie, and they go to the... Oh, but there's a line after Sue and Scott leave. One of the detectives turns to another and goes, only a dress could come up with a story like that.
Which I believe is the 1953 version of Bitches Be Crazy.
They go back to the Wax Museum, and the two police are looking around, and they run into Vincent Price, Charles Bronson, and then Vincent Price's other assistant. One of the detectives is, ooh, I know that. I don't know his name, but I know that guy. Yeah, without the beard, I know that guy.
Right.
And
can't remember, like, where he knows him from, but it's like, I know a face. He says, like, I'm not good with the names, but I know that face. I can't place him, but I know. So, like, we know that he's somebody the policemen know. But if the policemen recognize him, it's probably not a good thing.
Right. And then they walk past the Lincoln, and then they go, remember the police commissioner that was killed? Doesn't John Wilkes Booth look like the police commissioner? And it's like, yeah, he does. So now they're beginning to... Their suspicions are turning a little bit.
Tweaked a little bit.
They're tweaked a little bit because...
That is oddly odd.
There's two people missing, or two people have dead. Both of their bodies have been taken from the morgue. Both of them are resembled here in the wax. I think that would be enough for tweaking.
Yeah. And they never really mentioned the ex-benefactor, because didn't he also go missing? The body, you would think?
Yes, you would have to, because
but
he's
they didn't.
In there.
They didn't seem concerned about him.
They didn't mention that, but I'm sure that he had to because his body was in there.
Right, right. And then, like, while they're there, Sue has also gone back to, like, thoroughly examine Joan of Arc, quote unquote Joan of Arc. And Vincent Price is like, "Oh, you came back! I'm so glad that you're back. By the way, here's the head I made of you," and then shows her, like, his Marie Antoinette, but it's literally Sue's like face sculpted in as a head in a box, which is, I can imagine that if someone presented a box that had like the likeness of my head in it, I'd be a little, ah, which she, you know, reacts understandably, no thank you. But I think he like asks her like, oh, remember, I still want you to come model for me because like this is good, but like it could be better or something, something.
The police, they actually, he actually remembers who the second assistant is. Oh, that was so-and-so. He was in prison. He painted that mural on his prison wall and they released him. Then he went back to crime and then he disappeared. So they've recognized him. They go to arrest him. They go to his house. And they find the wristwatch of the police chief who has disappeared, or you know, who was murdered.
Right.
And they drag him in, and he is an alcoholic. He's like, you know, what happened to so, you know, where did you get this watch? I found it on the L, which is an elevated train. So they had elevated trains back then. You know, which line?
Sure.
They must have. He goes, I found it on the L. He goes, which line? The B line. It's like, what? And he's obviously lying, but he's obviously going through the DTs because... So here's an interesting... Here's something I found interesting. This is a remake of a movie from 1933. In the movie in 1933, the guy was a heroin addict.
Oh.
And they used heroin. Now, since between 1933 and 1953, they invoked the movie code. So they couldn't use heroin anymore, so they changed him from a junkie into a...
Junkie.
A drunk. But if you watch these, if you watch a lot of movies from like the 30s and 40s, they mention morphine and cocaine and heroin because
like
that was...
snuff. I didn't realize that this was already a remake. I thought that the Vincent Price House of Wax was the first one.
No, this is a remake. Yeah, remake from the 30s.
Okay, so there are three of these now.
There are three of these. The first one's not called House of Wax. I forget what it's called off the top of my head, but it is a remake of that movie.
Okay.
So we cut back to the House of Wax, and Scott is there, and he's sculpting, and Vincent is telling him he's sculpting his face, and this is obviously a comment on his life. He's like, no, make the jaw wider. Life has mistreated this man. You know, show it on his face, and...
Yeah.
And then Scott lets it slip like, oh, Sue's going to come by. It's her birthday. I'm going to take her out tonight. And Vincent is like, that's great. But before you go, could you please run to the florist? They're doing an arrangement for one of the exhibits. Can you just go over there and check? So he's doing this to get him out of the picture. So he leaves and then Sue shows up and she's looking for Scott and she's walking through, you know, all the exhibits. And while this is happening, Charles Bronson is following her. There's a scene, I know it was supposed to be dramatic, but it's where there's this row of heads and Charles Bronson has put his head up there. And I know it was supposed to be creepy, but it was just funny.
I think it's also partially because one of the heads, to me, I thought it was funny because it looked kind of like, if you know the Twilight Zone, the dummy episode with Jerry the dummy, they look kind of like an older Jerry head. So it was just kind of, it was just funny. Yeah. Because Charles Bronson, I don't know if it was the makeup for this movie or that's just his face, but he looked kind of like Cronin Magnum guy. So it's just.
No. Yeah, he's definitely made up to look sallow. His face has Yeah, there's definitely makeup on.
Like a thick kind of brow thing.
He's made
up
to look that way. So he follows her around, and she finally gets to Joan of Arc, and she peels the wig back, and she sees the blonde hair, and it's like, oh, it is Pamela. Mm-hmm. And then Vincent Price is there.
Yeah. I knew you would come.
So through this whole movie, whenever he was out and about in public, it was like he was deformed. He was hunched over, and it didn't look like his legs worked right. And that was just the way he moved. At this point, he stands up from his wheelchair, and he walks perfectly fine.
Gasp!
His hands are still fucked up, but he walks perfectly fine. And she tries to run out, and Charles Bronson is blocking the door. And then she does the typical... So Vincent Price grabs her by the shoulder. She does a typical woman... Vincent Price has made a waxed face for it, so she... Busts the wax, and it's actually a very effective moment in the film where she, you know, she's busting his the wax on his face and the face just falls off and shows, you know, his real burnt face, the man who's been following her around all this time.
So, but the interesting thing is, because I think the assumption that we're supposed to make is that when he's skulking around the darkness in his Phantom of the Opera getup, that the wax monster face is like a mask, but it's actually that like the good face is the mask, which was interesting. Cause I actually forgot about. So I was like, had a moment of, ah, cause it was genuinely just surprising when the nice face was,
you know what? That's a very good point. When most people wear a mask, it's not an ugly face. It's a good face. That is the mask.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be aware of those people.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Like a dame, she passes out.
What a typical broad. How dare she faint when faced with murderous murderers. Also, I'm backtracking slightly, but I will say, this is a very nitpick, but in the beginning of the movie, when nice Vincent Price, before the fire, is telling the potential benefactors how he makes his wax figures and, like, the painstaking procedures he does to, like, place each strand of hair into warm wax and so it looks like a real... But then later, Sue just, like, peels the entire wig off of Pamela's head, and I'm like, wait a second! Either he's gotten shy with his crafts work, or he just was fucking.
It was Charles Bronson. He's cutting corners.
He's cutting corners.
You know how those. You know how those
never outsource.
And while this is happening, we cut back to the police station and drunk.
And by take her downstairs, we mean
yes, he kidnapped her downstairs. And we cut back to the police station and Drunky McDrunkard.
They're basically waiting him out. They're like, eventually you're going to just be so, like, shaky that you just can't take it.
They've got this bottle of booze in front of him, and he's pouring him a glass, and he's drinking, and he's like, okay, I didn't kill anybody, but Vincent Price, he would kill him, and I would just take him to the, and we turn him into wax, and...
I can't stand it. All right, I'll tell you what I know. Patterson was killed because he looked like Booth.
You killed him?
No, not I. Jared at the waxworks. His hands were no good. He had to take subjects from real life.
You helped him?
No, they were already dead.
What about Burke?
He's there, too. In wax. He was the one who set fire to the old museum. Jared came out of it alive, but insane.
Kathy Gray?
Joan of Arc. Joan of Arc, that's Kathy. She's there with all the rest of them. That whole place is a morgue. He'll do the same with Sue Allen if he ever gets his hands on her. You've got to stop him. You've got to stop him before he does any more killing.
No, I did get the idea that while the criminal may have be criminally inclined, he was not a murderer. So while he might be sort of okay with some shady businesses, he was not, like, condoning murder or didn't want to, like, go down for murder. So he's like, okay, I did these things, but I didn't kill anyone. And I kind of
believe him, too. I believe Vincent Price took advantage of his alcoholism and said, you know, you do this for me, and I'll make sure that you're drowning in booze. I also believe that. Yeah. I don't believe...
And he's probably also like, I ask no questions.
Yeah, that's it, too. It's like, I didn't ask any questions. I collected the body, and I collected the bourbon.
Right. For all I know, they died on their own accord. I didn't know that he was going out and killing them. So, not a good guy, but not, like, the worst guy, I guess?
No.
As far as criminals go, he's okay, I guess.
Now, while this is happening, Scott has come back to the Wax Museum, and he's waiting for Sue. He's going to go downstairs, and so him and Charles Bronson get into a fight. He doesn't want him to go downstairs, and he's just like, he's beating him up and just pointing to the front door, like, just go. And Scott's like, I'm not...
Yeah. Right.
Ineffective. So right now, three things are happening at once. The police are now on their way to the Wax Museum. Scott and Charles Bronson, Igor, are fighting. And downstairs, Vincent Price has chained Sue up on a gurney, and he has placed her under the faucets of the boiling wax.
Which seems super ineffective and a waste of wax to perform it this way, whilst I understand, again, for the movie, it's more dramatic to have this long, prolonged, it's coming right at me so slowly. But I'm like, wouldn't it make more sense to just dip her in? Like, but again,
well,
for the movie.
I'm going to say this. Even though he is crazy, He is still an artist. The way that it is set up is that the machine distributes the wax evenly. So I think if she's going to be his masterpiece, he just doesn't want to dip her in wax. He wants it done correctly. So this machine would would distribute the wax evenly over her body. Also, she's clearly naked, which once again, I think would be kind of scandalous for 1953.
Is she? For some reason, I thought she had like the... not the corset, but like, I forget what it's called, but like, you know that like old timey, like white kind of romper thing that has like the ruffles up high? It's like ladies wore it under their big fluffy dresses. I thought she had that thing on, but also it does make sense that she would be nude because she's going to become a wax model. So if they waxed her with the thingy on, it would look lumpy. Yep. But also the thing that about this that's super fucked up is I remember they said earlier in the movie of like, they drugged someone through like a tea or something, so they were knocked out, to imply that like they were knocked out before their very untimely death, or they were already dead before their waxing. She is fully awake and screaming, so he's going to do this to her.
Well,
awake.
He does eventually put her to sleep, but she is aware of it when they first start, and then he eventually puts a because there's a very effective scene where it's sort of like she's in a box. And her hands are shackled to the side, and they cut to this close-up of her hands scraping the side of the box. Mm.
There's like wax on the side of the box. Like they've done this before.
It's a very effective scene. Yeah. So all three of these things are happening. The police are racing. Scott and Igor are fighting, and Vincent Price is getting ready to cover her in wax. Igor finally knocks out Scott, and he's going to put his body in the guillotine that is in the wax museum. A real working guillotine.
Yes. Why wouldn't it be? That seems totally safe.
He puts him in, and at that moment, the police bust in. And this is kind of funny. It's like they all swarm on Charles Bronson. He's fending them off pretty well. Then all of a sudden, he just stops fighting. He's like, you're holding off these four guys pretty well. And...
ran out of steam.
And he's like, where's Vincent Price? Whatever. I forget his character's name. He goes, where's the professor? Where's the professor? And not knowing that he's
deaf
and mute.
Jared.
Where's Professor Jared?
Yeah. And, all right, let's start this whole podcast over.
And so they go over to Scott and they take his head out of the guillotine. And right after they take it off, the blade comes down.
Yeah.
And they're like, where's Jared? And he's like, he's in the basement. So they're breaking the door down. So once again, we get these quick shots of the wax has to reach a certain temperature before he can...
like hundreds of degrees. It's like 350 or above. It's like fucking beyond boiling. So I feel like she's still screaming at this point. Like, I don't remember at what point she like is unconscious, but I feel like she's awake for most of
this. We're cutting between the dial and the door and Vincent Price and Sue. So a lot of quick cuts, and they finally burst the door open. Vincent Price has run up the door to fight them. So he's fighting all these cops. The head cop comes downstairs and moves Sue out from under the hot wax, and during the fight,
wheels the table away.
During the fight, Vincent Price gets pushed, which you knew was going to happen, gets pushed into the giant vat of wax.
What was the thing? It was Chekhov's boiling wax.
So this is why I know she's naked, because at this point, the police officer takes off his jacket and lays it over her.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I guess I guess my mind just filled in that lady romper thing because makes sense. But also, it just occurred to me this is now two movies where two Vincent Price movies where there is a death of someone falling into a big vat of liquidy badness. The other one being House on Haunted Hill, where someone falls into a lake of acid because of reasons. We'll just leave it there. Spoilers!
Then we go to the prologue. The epilogue. And because she goes...
we go to the Pamela.
It's like, it's so... like, it was so scandalous of a woman being almost naked on screen. Like, she almost died, but the only thing she can say to the police officer is, oh, thank you for covering up with your coat. It's like, you almost died, and you were embarrassed that you were naked? It was... you were almost covered, head to toe in wax. Thank goodness nobody saw my hoo-ha right. and my bitty-bitties.
I mean, but also, they probably did, because they were out there for a decent amount of time before you got covered up, but anyway. Then, like, the last minute and a half of this movie is so tonally, drastically different, I, like, had whiplash for a second, because they had the moment of, like, oh, do you want to keep... They have, like, the Marie Antoinette head that looks like Sue. They're like, oh, do you want to keep this as a souvenir? And she's like, no, thank you, blah. And then they had the weird... I can't remember the joke. It was so weird, but it was like of the criminal who's now in jail. Was it a sketch of him, or was it another head?
There was a wax head of Charles Bronson, and they just take it and they hold it up right up to the camera. It's like, this guy's going to have a beard by the time he gets out of jail. So the movie,
right? And then they're all
so the movie ends with a close up of a wax head of Charles Bronson, and that's.
But also, why did he have a wax head? Like, he wasn't one of
because he, the guy in the electric chair, when they sculpted him, he looked like Charles Bronson. Because the first guy to ever die in the electric chair supposedly looked like Charles Bronson.
Right.
So that's why they had a waxed head of Charles Bronson.
Okay.
And that's it. That's the House of Wax from 1953. And you said this might be better than
13 Ghosts. I'd have to watch 13 Ghosts again because it's been a while since I've seen. I've watched House on Haunted Hill so many times, and I forget that about like 13 Ghosts and House of Wax. So I need to revisit 13 Ghosts before I solidify. But I enjoyed this more than I thought it would. It wasn't as cheesy as I remembered it being. It was pretty, like, the pacing was pretty tight, and I enjoyed it for the most part. The ending was just very. Again, it just, the tone shift was so drastic and sudden that I didn't know what to make of that. So other than that and the, you know, fun sexism of the 50s, which is like, well, you know, what are you going to do at this point? But overall, it's a fun time, and I always enjoy Vincent Price.
Yes, it's a fun time. Vincent Price is fantastic in it. Like I said, Charles Bronson does a really good job playing a mute. He doesn't play it stupid, as you say. Mm-hmm. I believe it. He gets his emotions through with his facial expressions and his actions. So, yeah, it's a fun... Once again, it's a 53 movie, so if you're expecting blood, guts, and gore, you're not going to get it. But
that's when you get the 2005 remake that is not good, but very different. So, because I have seen that one also just because... and the best thing about that movie is the opening score. Some of the music is really good in that movie, but I remember it being... not good. It's like they take all of this, because I feel like as much as this 53 version isn't gory or graphic or horror to like a modern audience, it is like nuanced, and there is like a plot, and the characters develop, and you kind of see where Vincent Price starts and ends up, and there's a journey. Where in the 2005 one, it's just like teens go to town, and I think if I remember correctly, the whole town is made of wax, so that was kind of neat. But, like, it was just crazy guy is just crazy and just does
no,
this
there's,
to, like...
There's no reason like behind Chainsaw There's Massacre. No reason behind him doing it.
Exactly. It's just, like, that's just the crazy guy in that town that no one goes to. So it's, like, if you want that kind of thing, or if you need more actual blood and guts in your House of Wax, sure, but it's very generic. And, like, Paris Hilton is in it, so... we'll take that as you will. I think Jared Padalecki's in it too, which is if you like Jared Padalecki, then sure, watch it for that sense. But it is it's not a must see. Like if you have a list of horror movies to see, the 2005 House of Wax is not one of them.
All right, so we are both going to recommend this movie. It's fun Halloween viewing. So yeah. Emmy, what do you want to promote? Anything?
If you are in the Boston area, and if it is still the month of October where you are, then come down to the Rising Square Theater. We've got a ton of fun events going on. It's our 10th anniversary of Comedy Sports, so we're doing some fun alumni events and special top acts. We've got a spooky Halloween match on the 28th, 29th, whatever that Saturday is. And then I'm also in a play, also at the Rising Square Theater, that is the October 25th and 27th, or is it 27th, 29th, whatever that Friday, Sunday is. I don't know dates right now. I should look at a calendar. Pretty much anytime you want to find me perform, I'll be at the Rising Square Theater. And also get your COVID booster, because I just got mine today. So.
All right, that's it. I want to thank Emmy for doing this, and we'll hear everybody. We'll see everybody. We won't even see them. Just tune into the next Burt Reynolds and Charles Bronson podcast. That's it. Goodbye, Pamela.
Pamela.
To support this podcast, please go to www.patreon.com/ScottWhite and give what you're able. If you're listening on iTunes, please give a review. This should help people find the podcast when they're searching. No matter what services you use to listen, please leave feedback. We always want to improve. Thank you for listening to the Burt Reynolds and Charles Bronson podcast.
Cross the Streams Media.
This has been a Cross the Streams Media Podcast.